And the next case is 77298 Pratt versus Nevada Department of Health and Human Services. We have Mr. Levine here representing the appellant, Ms. Anderson representing the respondents. Okay, Mr. Levine, did you want to reserve any time in rebuttal?
I would like to reserve 4 minutes.
You may do so. And Mr. Levine, for both parties, we'd like you both to comment on a case. It's an opinion by the Court of Appeals called Goodwin versus Jones. It's 132 Nevada Vance 12. It was filed March 3, 2016. I know we're kind of blindsiding you on this, but we came up with this in preparing for today. If this, what impact this opinion has on each of your cases, then?
I will concede I am unfamiliar with the case.
Okay. Well,
so I don't know how I could comment on it.
Well, then you can. We'll give you a chance later to do it. It's just the thing is the Court of Appeals doesn't do that many opinions. They did one on an issue that, you know, may be relevant here to this case. So we, I don't usually look at just Supreme Court cases. We've got to look at Court of Appeals, too. Probably, we'll see how the arguments go, and then we'll decide at the end. But yeah, we think we probably should, both of you should comment on it then. And again, what happens, why it's important is when the Court of Appeals issues an opinion, then either side can file a petition for review, and then if the court doesn't review it or change it, then it's binding authority, just like the Supreme Court cases.
Can you share a quick hint as to what the holding of the case is?
Well, I'll let you both read it here, and then you can both give us your take on it then like that. But it's 132 Nevada's Opinion 12, decided March 3, 2016. Okay. That being said, let's get back to the cases you did argue, and we'll talk about that. Mr. Levine, how much time did you want in rebuttal?
4 minutes.
You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. David Pratt was deprived of his property interest in his job in violation of due process, both constitutional due process and that due process provided by the state through enactment of statutes under Chapter 284 of the State Personnel Code and NAC 284, which are the regulations of the Personnel Commission. He was terminated because of a database error that prevented him from purchasing a gun that he didn't actually need, in fact was prohibited from carrying, or would be prohibited from carrying on his job. The state simply assumed that that David Pratt was a convicted felon based upon a call from the law enforcement academy he was in and immediately began preparing the notice of proposed termination, which is, of course, an NPD 41 specificity of charges. Due process requires notice of the charges, an explanation of the evidence on which they are based, and an opportunity to invoke the discretion of the decision maker with regard to those actual charges that were noticed. The document that he was served with for proposed termination, the NPD 41, stated information relayed to Sergeant David Joseph by Academy staff indicated that you attempted to purchase a firearm from the senior range master at SSLEA, who is the owner of the firearms store. The background check results revealed that you are a person who is prohibited from possession of a firearm, therefore a person who is incompatible with employment of a peace officer, and it accused him of failing to disclose a criminal conviction when disclosure is required by law, regulation, or agency policy, failure to maintain a current occupational license. None of that was actually true. The state did no investigation as required by the personnel code. I'll get back into that. But he was terminated based upon those charges. He filed a timely appeal and went to a post-termination hearing based upon those charges. The hearing officer concluded that he was not a convicted felon and that he had done nothing wrong. The hearing officer stated in his written findings, I specifically reject the assertions that Mr. Pratt was dishonest or that Mr. Pratt failed to disclose a criminal conviction as required by law. Instead, the hearing officer upheld the termination on grounds that were not previously charged and for which Mr. Pratt never had an opportunity to invoke the discretion of the decision maker at the pre-term hearing level, which was, oh, well, I have to uphold it anyway because NAC 289550, you will never be able to be post-certified within the 18-month deadline, which was June of 2017, and affirm the termination on that grounds. Now, let's set aside for a moment the fact that the hearing officer and the district court misread the statute. It violates due process to uphold a termination on grounds that were not previously charged.
Just briefly, the notice says, and that's it, at 275, it talks about his inability to successfully complete post-certification.
Right.
So he has noticed that the issue is you can't complete your post or you can't get post-certified.
Correct.
And he knew at the same, he knew before the department knew that why he got kicked out of Silver State, right?
Oh,
they told him, hey, you got to go. So he knew right then in January what the issue was.
Correct. But, however, he also told them, no, I'm not. And when he got the letter the day after he was kicked out of Silver State from the Department of Public Safety that said you were rejected because you have been convicted of a crime which carried imprisonment of more than 1 year, and that is at 346 in the record, if you believe this is an error, you may appeal. And he did appeal. He filed an appeal with the FBI under the instructions that came on the rejection letter. The state didn't even wait for the results of that appeal to come back. And, of course, it did come back in May after his termination. The FBI's response to the appeal, which is at 358 in the record, and they said, we didn't reject you, and we don't know why you were rejected. So the manner in which he was given notice, yes, it does say, well, you can't successfully complete post. But it's you can't successfully complete post because you're a convicted felon, which just wasn't true. Now, in addition to due processes, the due process obligation to have adequate notice of the charges, and, you know, I will credit this court. In Watson versus North Las Vegas Housing Authority, this court recognized the requirement of being able to, that due process requires an opportunity to address the actual charges noticed long before the Supreme Court reached the same conclusion in Loudermill. The Supreme Court reached that conclusion 4 years before Loudermill was decided, and the California court in Skelly did it 10 years before Loudermill. Due process also requires a post-termination hearing, which requires the state to carry the burden of proof to prove the actual charges that were noticed and alleged. David Pratt went to that post-termination hearing. In the pre-hearing statement, the state said, we had to terminate him because he can't get post-certified because he is a convicted felon. Well, the state had the burden of proving that at the post-termination hearing, and they did not. Not only did the hearing officer find that they not proved it, but the state later conceded in the proceedings before the district court that David Pratt didn't actually do anything wrong. They actually conceded that in oral argument, but asserted that, well, you can have just cause even without misconduct by an employee. That is not true, and that also runs afoul of several provisions of the state personnel code. One of the key provisions of the state personnel code is
some of that misconduct not getting certified in that time period? Why couldn't he go somewhere else?
Well,
what stopped him from going somewhere else to get post-certified if he had a year and arguably half to do this?
No, he did not. The state sends him to the academy. The state waited more than a year. The state waited more than 12 months to put him in the first academy because the state did not adequately plan for the opening of the Stein facility. They hired a bunch of forensic specialists without making arrangements or realizing, oh, wait a second, we have to get these people post-certified. And then when they went to the Department of Corrections and asked the Department of Corrections to do it, the Department of Corrections said, sorry, we can't help you.
Is it the state's responsibility for him to have a post-certification, or is it the employee's responsibility?
Yes, because, first and foremost, he's working during that time. The state is saying, you're going to work here. You're going to report to work. You're going to do these duties until we send you. Second, it's not in the record, but the court may know I represent multiple law enforcement unions. Most academies will not accept you unless you are sponsored by a local government entity. In other words, you can't just walk up to the academy, the Southern Desert Regional Academy at community college or College of Southern Nevada and say, oh, I want to join, you need a sponsor.
Well, let me ask you this. You have 18 months. Well, you have a year, and you can get a six-month add-on. Let's say they never send him in 18 months. He's not certified in 18 months. Does he get to keep his job?
As I have pointed out, the answer is yes, as a post-probationary employee, because there is no just cause. The options then become, you may reclassify him, you may transfer him, or you may do a temporary reduction, or you can do a temporary reduction, and I cited the provisions of the Nevada Administrative Code, personnel regulations, which address that. You don't get to wait to send him to the academy when a database error causes him to be erroneously excluded from the academy, then refire him, particularly without doing an investigation or giving him the notice required by the state personnel code.
What about the findings of the hearing officer that when he got notice that he didn't communicate with the chain of command? Now, I appreciate that those may have been in dispute, but we have the findings. That obviously he was doing some things maybe to figure out what happened or what mistake happened, but that he was not communicating with the department or providing information that there was a mistake or any of these things had gone wrong to maybe give the department an opportunity to work with it.
I understand when you say the findings are the findings. However, findings are not findings if they are arbitrary and capricious. They actually have to be supported by evidence in the record. We put on testimony that he attempted to contact his chain of command several times, Sergeant Joseph would not return his calls, okay? And after that testimony was put on, they called Sergeant Joseph, and Sergeant Joseph did not contest that. So, yes, the hearing officer did make those sort of additional statements and observations, but they are arbitrary and capricious. But more significantly, they turn the burden of proof on its head. Due process requires the state to carry the burden of proof, and the personnel regs, NAC 284655, says the state has the obligation to conduct, I'm going to quote it for you, an impartial fact-finding investigation to confirm that there is evidence, that evidence exists, to support the personnel action. That's NAC 284655. It is not David Pratt's obligation to carry the state's burden. It is the state's burden to investigate under the personnel code and the state's obligation to develop evidence. Remember, we're talking about a property interest here. The state cannot deprive somebody of a liberty interest or a property interest without due process of law. And the Nevada personnel code says that a person, actually the statute, I'm sorry, NRS 284-150 sub 2, says that a person may not be dismissed from the classified service of the state of Nevada, post probationary, unless or in a manner which does not comply with the provisions of both the statutes and the regulations enacted herewith. If, in other words, state law prohibits firing somebody under a process or a procedure or a deviation from any of the statutes under the personnel code 284.
So you're saying he should have just been reclassified but not dismissed?
Well, they should have done an investigation to quickly realize, wait a second, he's not a convicted felon. Therefore, he's not prohibited from becoming a peace officer. And as I point out in one of the footnotes of the reply brief, they just send him to a state academy from the state of Nevada. Firearm becomes a non-issue because the disabilities under the Brady Act do not apply to firearms issued by the states or their political subdivisions. That's why we have prohibited people at Metro and some of the other agencies whose unions I represent, who, because of domestic violence, cannot buy a firearm. They go to work, they check out a firearm, they use it on the job, and they check it back in and then they leave. This would have been a non-issue, but for the fact that the state did not adequately plan. I believe I'm going into my reserve time.
You have a little over 3 minutes left. You may reserve that.
Thank you.
Ms. Anderson.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Linda Anderson. NRS 289-550 is what's at issue here. The legislature tried to balance the very difficult job of making sure for public safety reasons that our peace officers are fully trained. And so they required that you can start working as a peace officer, but within a year you've got to have this training. They recognized the problems with the workforce and filling it, and so they allowed the commission to do an extension for 6 months. all of that would have worked very well with Mr. Pratt. He was set to get his training within that required time period. Unfortunately, none of us foresaw that he would go and try and purchase a gun from Silver State Academy and get this hit on his background check. The hearing officer felt very sympathetic to Mr. Pratt's circumstances and threw out all those arguments about convictions and all those things and said basically both the employer and the hearing officer were bound by 289.550 and had to go ahead and do a termination. And I know that sounds like the greatest bureaucracy, that we would tell somebody that, hey, we hired you, but we're going to have to fire you, and you can reapply. But when you think about what the legislature did, the impact of the statute was actually to make sure that peace officers have employment as well. So in other words, if Mr. Pratt were going to come back and apply, he'd be in a pool, and there may be peace officers that are applying. Now, we're always competing with our sister agency, Department of Corrections, who pay more, which is why the forensic unit of the psychiatric hospital struggles with this, so I don't disagree with all of the issues that Mr. Levine raised. But in this case, the hearing officer was correct. The peace officer training had to be completed within 18 months. It was not. And so the termination had to lie. And the just cause, the public good, was defined by the legislature. And that's basically where the hearing officer decided the case. Even though he hoped Mr. Pratt would be available for reapplication, he recognized, and while he made comments about Mr. Pratt not doing what he needed to do to move it along, the reality is due to the academies, the 22 weeks he'd have to do, there was just no way for him to complete it within that 18-month period.
Ms. Anderson, in view of the statute, and we certainly understand your argument here on the time limits there, so your position is that this court has no ability to create equitable relief in any way where you have real unfortunate set of circumstances here to get around that statute. We have to strictly enforce it.
And that's really because I don't know how you would develop that. How long would he have? Let's say he went back to the academy and again, for whatever reason, did not pass. Does that continue on and on? I mean, it becomes an indefinite. So it's really a balance the legislature has struck to say, if you are going to be a peace officer, you've got to have this training, and there's real public safety reasons for that, and to try to craft some employment that he would have to come in and work under those circumstances and get paid as a peace officer. We need someone to be a peace officer. So I don't know how we would structure that at the division to do that when we have peace officers.
So I think there's a no on that. Okay.
That would be a long way of saying no.
Here. Okay, great. Okay, anything else?
Well, I have a question. Yes. Ms. Anderson, I'll ask you what I asked Mr. Levine. What if you hire the gentleman 18 months, you never send him to post? At the end of 18 months, is he terminated?
We would, and you know, I always say we terminate him or he could resign. You know, Mr. Pratt could have resigned and then immediately reapplied or applied to the Department of Corrections and gotten another 18-month period. So those are always the options that they would have available. But yes, we wouldn't, you know, be able to get, because the statute doesn't give the commission any further extension authority beyond the 6 months.
Well, if you are the ones that are sending them there, and you're the only way you can get in is by the state agency, isn't that somewhat arbitrary? Like Justice Stegler said, you could just decide, or the agency could just decide not to send them to post, and then he's gone.
Unfortunately, though, we would never want to do that because we want to have peace officers. I mean, it's in the employer's interest to get people through the post academy to meet the requirements of the law. I mean, we actually paid for the training, so it wouldn't, you know, we would be able in the year to let them go during their probationary period if they weren't a good fit. But to keep them on another 6 months once they became a permanent employee and then keep them out of the academy would not make much sense.
But it is hard. I mean, he is talking about he's represented a lot. Just from what we know generally, it is hard to get into these academies.
It
to
is.
Post. So,
But in this, none of those circumstances apply in Mr. Pratt's case because he was placed in the academy in a time that he should have been able to complete. The division struggles with the academy placements because we're, again, competing with the Department of Corrections for those slots. But it's our interest, and we were able in this time to get a reasonable period of time and get Mr. Pratt into the academy in the time where he could have easily made that 18-month period. And it's in the interest of the forensic unit to have someone with Mr. Pratt's qualifications post-certified and in his job. Going through, you know, another employee would not make much sense to us.
If it's in your interest, and the record is what he's saying, that the supervisor never called him back. He did try to reach him several times, and that was not contested. If it's so much in their interest, then isn't that contrary
to what you're
saying?
There was actually nothing the supervisor could do at that point. The time period had started to run, and Mr. Pratt, and I think this is in the hearing officer's decision, was in the best position to clear up this issue. Mr. Pratt was aware that he had a problem in his background. The testimony at the hearing was when he applied for the division, he had a hit come up. He knew about that. So it's interesting that when he was with purchasing the gun and when he went to got kicked out of Silver Academy, that he did not have the records readily available to show that there was no conviction. He testified at the hearing. He had to go to Baton Rouge. There were a lot of issues. But he was the one that was in the best place to fix that situation. The employer, his supervisor, there really wasn't anything that they could do to clear that up. Only Mr. Pratt could. They got a letter from Department of Public Safety saying that he had this conviction. That's in part why you see the specificity have more. We would not be able to have access or be able to contest whatever those convictions were.
Because they were out of state.
So, and so we had not enough information, and something could have come up in the background. Fortunately for Mr. Pratt, he was able to, it sounds like, at some point go through his appeal process and clear that up. But unfortunately, it was too late for the 18-month period. And I do want to note, this is why when Mr. Pratt was hired, that's why he was put on notice that this was a condition of his job, and he was on notice that he had to get that peace officer training. The hearing officer was flummoxed in his decision why he didn't do more to address that. But in reality, once we got to the point when we sought termination, there was nothing else that could be done. The time had already run. He couldn't have completed an academy within the time period that he was required to, which was in July of that year.
The Goodwin case, and we can ask him as well, has to do with qualifying misconduct and whether or not certifying in the time period with an employee in there. It was up north, but it was a court employee, whether or not that was misconduct for purposes of getting unemployment benefits. It took it one step further, and the Court of Appeals had said that was qualifying misconduct. That's what that case was about.
And I think
this came to mind, obviously, with me having been on the case. That's what I questioned, is this qualifying misconduct, and it is.
And this is an unusual case for misconduct because it's really the misconduct is failing to maintain your certificate. But those are grounds that he agreed to when he took the job. It's something that by statute the employer has no option. They can't have him doing peace officer duties unless he's certified after that 18-month period. So he could no longer perform his job. So while it's not your traditional form of misconduct, it is a basis that for the good of the public good that you would do a termination because they can't meet the job criteria.
Ms. Anderson, do you think that the specificity of charges were specific enough? There was enough specificity for Mr. Pratt to satisfy due process?
I do, because we cited to the grounds of failure to maintain a certificate and that incompatibility with activity. I agree that there were other things in there, but the hearing officer clearly ruled that those did not apply. They weren't really pursued at the hearing because there was no proof of a conviction that could be put forth. But in the end, the statute was controlling, according to the hearing officer, that he could not maintain a could not get a certificate or maintain a certificate in the time that was required.
Okay, anything else, Ms. Anderson?
Not unless you have any other questions.
Any other questions?
I'll give my extra time to Mr. Levine.
We'll give Mr. Levine the rest of his time, 3 minutes and 3 seconds.
Thank you.
First off, I don't think I've ever heard that.
I would gladly accept it if it were possible.
Okay, Mr. Levine,
on the record. Yes, a hit did come up in connection with his background when he was hired, and as the record shows in pages 97, 98, 83, and 107 of the appendix, the testimony was that Mr. Pratt brought in paperwork to Department of Health and Human Services, Human Resources, to clarify to their satisfaction that he was not a convicted felon. So he did address that in connection with his employment. Again, it's 83 in the appendix, 97, 98, and page 107. DHHS is misreading the statute. The statute does not require termination. All it says is a person who fails to become certified within the required time shall not exercise any of the powers of a peace officer after the time for becoming certified has expired. But he could still do the other portions of the job, and the undisputed evidence, even from their witnesses, was he could still do the peace officer functions under the supervision of another peace officer. Remember, he doesn't have to complete the certification by June. What he could do is they could put him in a different position temporarily and then put him into the next academy. If you put him into a full-time academy, when I say full-time, unlike Silver State, which is part-time where you go to work and then you go at nights and weekends, which was the testimony, if you go into a state academy, corrections, Department of Public Safety, any of the state academies, it's full-time. He wouldn't be exercising the powers of a peace officer. He would be studying and training and learning, and upon graduation from the full-time academy, would be able to do everything in connection with the job. I want to go...
How is it that you're saying he, at time of hiring, was able to convince everybody that this was not a felony, and yet later on, when this comes up, he's not able to go to administration and go, look, HR hired me knowing exactly this.
First and foremost, he's trying to figure out, why am I being denied? I've already shown it's clear that I'm not a convicted felon. Why am I getting a hit under the Brady Act? And so what he did was he followed to the letter the instructions that he was given by the Department of Public Safety, which is, if you think this is an error, contact the FBI here through this process, which he did. They didn't even wait for that appeal to the FBI to come back before they fired him, and the FBI said, we did not disqualify you through the National Crime Information Center, and we don't know why you were disqualified. He had to track it down to the state police in Louisiana. But I do want to address Justice Stiglitz's question she asked in the first go-around, which was, why couldn't he put himself into another academy? Well, because it was represented to him that the reason you got kicked out is you're a convicted felon, he wouldn't have a reason to go looking for another academy, and because they didn't assert that, oh, it's the 18 months why we're firing you, his focus is on, I've got to address this felony issue, not go looking for other academies. But the fact is they could have put him in another academy and just waited for him to finish it.
Mr. Levine, my last question I asked Ms. Anderson to address, and I asked you to do it. Under that statute, does the Supreme Court have the discretion to fashion an equitable remedy in a case like this?
I don't believe the court needs to address it through an exercise of equitable remedy. I believe the court already has an adequate remedy by determining that the state personnel codes were not fired, and therefore you cannot terminate, and you're going to have to find some other option, be it transfer, reclassification, or put them in a new academy.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you both. Excellent arguments. And here's what we're going to do is starting tomorrow's the 7th. Mr. Levine, we'll give you 7 days from tomorrow, so by February 14th, if you could file just a response about the applicability or inapplicability of this case. I'll give you the citation again.
I do the citation. I hate to bring this up.
Okay, well, let's do the 21st.
That would be great.
Okay, are you going to Disneyland for Valentine's Day or something? It's probably a good idea to do that. Okay, so we'll Ms. Anderson, we'll give you the 28th. Is a week enough for you after that? Okay, let's give you, you do it in increments of seven is how we do it. I'd ask our clerks sit in on the on these arguments, whether they're in Carson City or here. So I see Brad and Elliot back there. If you both would monitor that when Mr. Levine gets his response in, if you send it to the three of us, and likewise when Ms. Anderson does, and so we can read it, and then we'll go ahead and deem the case submitted as well. And Elizabeth, you have that citation too, I referred to, if you need it. We'll make sure we got everybody covered here. So it's this case is Goodwin versus Jones. It's Supreme Court case number 62493, and the citation of it is 132 Nevada Advance Opinion 12, decided March 3, 2016.
And to make sure I understand, you want
supplemental
briefing addressing Goodwin.
Yeah, just applicability in a applicability. As Justice Silver gave you a preview on it, it's not directly on point with the facts of that case with this one, but the legal principles, whether they apply or don't apply to this case.
Is there a limitation on the size of the supplemental briefing?
How about 10 pages, right? I don't think you'll need it, but...
The limitation is it'd be good.
I like that. That's the thing. So 10 pages for each side. If you want to do them less...